And good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to have back here on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. Houseplant questions, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. The idea here is it is a regularly recurring opportunity for people to ask questions. If you have a problem, you're not quite sure how to solve it, she will try to help. Maybe you're thinking about things that you'll want to be planting this year, and maybe you're looking for some suggestions, and she can try to help with that. Any and all of that sort of thing, just give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and we do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Glad to have you here once again.
Good morning.
Well, now it's definitely climatological spring, depending on when you start counting. We've had some warmer weather. We've had quite a bit of rain. I think in my yard, things like daffodils and tulips, I think they've jumped up about 2 inches in over the past
overnight,
couple of days. So it seems like they're rushing right along. Snowdrops, they're into their middle age, I think, and so things are going right along.
Yeah, we'll hope. I mean, it really, you know, although we get these warm spells and cold spells, but that's pretty typical of March if you think about it. And so usually the plants are pretty good at dealing with that. And even if they're up a little bit, I know sometimes people get concerned because they'll see the leaves popping up of daffodils or tulips or whatever, but those are really pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they would get, you know, really frosted, as in if it got to like in the 20s, and even if those got frosted, the flower is still well protected. So people don't need to worry too much if they're starting to see things pop up.
Okay, well, that's good because it's possible we could, you know, the last frost is well into April. So, you know, that could possibly happen. It is kind of disappointed. Maybe at this point we're about where average would be. I guess we have had years when we maybe earlier have had a burst of unusually warm weather,
right.
Things wake up and say, okay, it's time to get going. And then right away they could get slammed with cold weather. And unfortunately with some things, that means then you don't – later on maybe you don't get flowers it nips stuff and it takes
right.
it a while to get over it. I seem to recall – I don't know if it was last year.
It was
2 years before.
Ago. I think it was 2 years ago.
When actually a lot of things like more tender things got going, hosta and stuff like that. And then – we had real cold weather.
Yeah. In April.
Yes.
Which we typically don't have really severe cold in April.
And it got over it, but it took some time.
Yeah. So it really is one of those things. So let's hope that it's a normal – I don't even know what normal springs are anymore, but let's hope it's a semi-normal spring. And the nice thing is hopefully we'll get a few nice days that people can actually get out and do some things if they're like me. Normally I've done things in December, you know, where actually I've done some gardening things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this last December, if you're like me, I didn't get a chance to do much of anything because it was so cold and icy and all that stuff. But there's still an opportunity, and most things are still dormant enough. The trees and stuff are still dormant. Well, you certainly could still be doing some pruning if you want to go that route. If you got grapes, you could still prune them. So there's still an opportunity to do some pruning yet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Question to welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Right off the bat, we got somebody here. We got an off-the-air question. Somebody who is interested in doing some seeding of grass. They have a small terrace they're going to seed, and they want to know when is the earliest that they can start.
Usually we say the month of April is the best time. And that's really mainly because, especially if you're using Kentucky bluegrass, it's really notoriously slow to germinate, especially in cool soils. So what we're trying to do is wait long enough so that the soil temperatures raise, and then you get good germination and quick germination. So usually we wait at least till April. But you can get ready now, as in, you know, look and see if you have any perennial weeds. You know, that might be a good thing if you're actually doing some overseeding or seeding into things and you have some perennial weeds. Maybe you want to go ahead and try and take care of those now before you actually do any seeding. Maybe you want to think about adding compost to the soil area. Maybe you don't have particularly good soil, a lot of clay in the soil. You could do that. So there's still things you could do in March, sort of getting ready for your seeding in April.
Mm. And when you say weeds, are you talking about physically removing them or are you talking about using a herbicide?
Yeah, well, you certainly, it depends on if they're actively growing, you certainly could use a herbicide. So it could be something like, you know, some of the early stuff, say you have, although it's pretty easy to rake up things like chickweed and henbit and some of those. So if you really start starting to see those, which are really early, cool season kinds of weeds. You could rake those off. They're actually pretty easy to physically remove those. Or you could actually use an herbicide on those. So you could actually do that and still have enough time to go ahead and then go ahead and seed in April. So you could do that. Certainly, if you have anything like dandelions, most of those are just starting to pop up, I noticed. So, you know, again, if they're actively growing, then herbicides can be used. If they're not, then you need to do a physical removal.
Okay. We are starting to get some callers in here, and let's start with someone in Champaign on line one, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about wilts that I historically get on cucumbers and pumpkins that I've started. I think it might be associated with a beetle transferring something, and I just wondered what's the best way to prevent that. And it seems like, you know, I get to the point where the vines are doing pretty well, and I'm starting to get a few cucumbers or the pumpkins are starting to go, and then all of a sudden the vines start wilting and everything dies off.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, it's really tough for those. You can use it early in the season. You actually can use row covers. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're called floating row covers. And it's just kind of this white spun bond material. And they actually just sort of really just lay it across. You don't need any structure or anything. You just lay across the plants. And you can protect them from the beetles that way. The trouble is, of course, you have to have pollination in order to get the fruit or the pumpkins, whatever you're looking for, the cucumbers. And so that ends up being the issue. So you eventually have to take that off because then you have to have the pollinators. So, you know, certainly there's some insecticides it could use. You have to be, obviously, you have to be concerned about using those around bees. But the beetles are really an issue. And it's a tough one, I'll be honest with you. It's really a tough one to deal with. So whether you want to sort of, you know, maybe 1 year sort of not have cucumbers, pumpkins for a while to see if you can reduce the population. It's usually also good sanitation, you know, getting rid of the vines. I don't know if you've already done that already, but get rid of those. Yeah. Make sure you get that all cleaned up and shred it, compost it, something, sort of get rid of all that stuff so you don't have any overwintering guys out there too. So
would there be any advantage to planting later? Will you still get a problem if you plant later in the season?
Yeah, unfortunately. Actually, earlier is actually better, but then the pumpkins and cucumbers don't really like it all that well. But sometimes if you actually can plant a little bit earlier, you can get them going. And also sometimes if you can actually go ahead and put some soil on the, you know, where the leaf nodes are. Sometimes if you go ahead and put soil on those leaf nodes, they'll actually go ahead and root right there.
Sure.
And then if you get more rooting, then sometimes if you do happen to get, you know, the wilt, bacterial wilt, then hopefully they'll continue to live enough that you can go ahead and get a fruit off of them. So that really is a tough one. I'll admit that for sure.
Well, it's not just me. Okay.
No, it's not just you. That's a tough one around here.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's go on to another Champaign listener. This is someone on line number two. And hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have two questions. First is about amaryllis. I have had mixed success. Finally, after 5 years, I have a couple that are going to bloom again. But what is the appropriate procedure for wintering over amaryllis and then bringing them back?
Well, usually, you know, depending on when you get them, of course, but usually we actually want to go ahead and usually they'll flower. Most people like them to flower over the Christmas season, the holiday season kind of thing, that winter season. But you don't necessarily have to do it that way. But usually what we'll do is we'll actually go ahead and let them flower, do their thing, and then go ahead and actually you can take them outside, treat them like houseplants, whatever. Just go ahead and grow them on through the season. And usually around the 1st of September is the time to start their dormancy. And you quit watering. And actually the best thing to do is just put them underneath, you know, put them in the basement. Add a light. Don't water them. Nothing. Just let them go for 3 months and then pull them out. And
then about 3 months is all they need.
Yep. And you can do that any – you don't have to do that necessarily at the holiday time, but that's usually when people like to do it.
Yeah, I don't care when they bloom. I just, the last 4 years, I've wintered them over in a closet with the door closed because I don't have a basement. But I have gotten leaves, but no blooms.
So did the leaves actually yellow up? And
eventually in the late fall, they do.
Yeah, because you really want them to go completely dormant, as in, you know, the leaves yellow and the whole thing.
I usually put them back in when the weather starts to turn in September and then leave them in until I got mine out about a month ago. And I'm getting two flowers this year.
Oh, well, then you should. Right. That should have been plenty of time to get them.
What is the amount of time they should be wintered over?
So usually about 3 months.
3 months. Okay.
But you really need to count from when they're actually, the leaves are yellowing and they're really to the point of dormancy. Because a lot of times those leaves stay green for a long time. And
they
don't go dormant. So
right. My other question is about roses. When is the best time to put the sulfur on the roses?
As far for a fungicide you're talking about, or for the soil, or I'm not sure.
Fungicide.
For a fungicide?
Yes.
Usually, well, I'm not sure exactly what disease you have issues with, but usually by the time the leaves start coming out is when you really want to start protecting them with a fungicide.
Okay, thank you very much.
So once they start to bud out.
All right, very good. Well, we welcome other callers. Sandy Mason is the guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, always on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So, again, if you have a problem or you're looking for a suggestion on something to plant, maybe you have a particular place or there's a particular kind of thing that you're looking for and maybe you'd like some ideas, Sandy will see if she can help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Just for a second to go back to the grass thing, I just want to make sure we've answered this question, but if you have an existing lawn and what you're doing is a kind of fertilizer or weed control, or maybe you're doing one of those things that's a combined deal, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about the first time, we're real still talking about maybe about 5 weeks out, right, from where we are now, maybe around the middle of April?
You mean as far as putting out
as when you put it,
or any of that kind of stuff? Yeah, usually, because most of the time the first thing that people like to put down is a pre-emergent control for crabgrass. And generally we're talking about mid-April, you're absolutely right. And then often people go ahead and fertilize at that time, or we usually like to encourage people to wait a little bit later and maybe do around the 1st of May with their fertilization. But sometimes you don't have choices because it's all there together.
Okay.
So,
is there anything else? I suppose, though, you'd also want to say, particularly at a time like this, we have had a lot of moisture. Things going to be wet. You probably don't want to be spending a lot of time walking around on your grass if you can possibly help it. So, is there really anything else at this point that you would suggest that people do, or just leave it alone for a while and don't worry about it, and think about something else for a while? You can in April you can start thinking about your lawn.
Yeah. Well, it might be to me it gives you a little bit of time here where you can start evaluating the lawn and really deciding on what do I really need to do. And I guess the big thing with lawns is anytime you have open spaces you're going to have weed issues. We know that because nature abhors the vacuum and something's going to come in there no matter what. So sometimes rather than maybe thinking about using crabgrass control or something like that, maybe you really need to be thinking about actually thickening up the lawn to take care of those open spaces so crabgrass can't germinate or some of the other weeds can't germinate. So maybe just kind of thinking about those kind of things. And maybe if you have this would be a good time to actually be thinking about it. If you do have ruts or anything, maybe you'd be thinking about smoothing things out. We don't recommend rolling the lawns anymore. That used to be something that was used many years ago, but we really don't recommend because it's just compacting the soil. So we don't really recommend that. But if you have, certain areas, you may want to add some compost or soil or something, and you can actually add a light layer to grass and it'll grow up through it. So you can do a little bit of that kind of thing if you decide to do it. But yeah, it's pretty squishy right now for sure.
Well, given, now that you mentioned that, I do remember people had these things and these great big drums.
Yeah. That I remember my grandpa had one.
Were very, I guess you filled them with water. So they were very heavy, and people did that. And I'm thinking, you are going to get compaction. What was it that people thought that they were doing?
Yeah, well, I think after the winter, and I think people a lot of times will notice this, sometimes your lawn tends to look a little bumpy. And, where maybe you had a little frost heaving or maybe you've had a little washout, a little erosion or something. And so that was the idea. Rather than adding soil or adding something to take care of those spots, people squished it down. And sometimes you also get a lot of earthworm activity, especially if we get, a lot of rain in early season. Sometimes we'll get earthworm activity and sometimes you'll get these little mounds from the earthworm. So that was the other thing that they were trying to sort of smooth it out that way. So the only time we ever do use the rollers again is that if you are going to start a new lawn, maybe you want to do a very light rolling to make sure you get a good seed to soil contact, after you've seeded it. But that would be the only time. It's not something we normally would do.
All right. Back to the phones here, and we'll talk with next with somebody in Charleston, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, is now the appropriate time to apply dormant oil spray? We have a tree with a little rust problem.
Yes, it is. Usually we're wanting to have at least sometime where it's above freezing for about 24 hours afterwards. So you just try to find a day where it's, you know, certainly like today. Well, it's a little rainy today. Might be an issue. But if you can find a day where it's not raining, but then it's a little bit warmer, is good.
Do you want to apply it before the buds open?
Depending on what you're looking, if it's truly a dormant spray, then yes, absolutely. Now, some of the sprays now, the horticultural oils and stuff, actually are a little lighter weight, and so you actually can use them as a dormant spray as well as a summer spray. But if you're using it at the rate for a dormant spray, you want to do it before the leaves bud out. Otherwise, it can harm the leaves.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana on line number two. Hello.
Hi. I just want to find out, how do you stop Creeping Charlie? I'll hang up.
There is no way.
Can I just say there's no way?
Creeping Charlie.
It really is a tough one. And it is one of those weeds that is just very adaptable. You know, sun, shade, moist, dry, whatever. And it's just Creeping Charlie's just one of those. And that may be one that people may have noticed is starting to green up right now. It's finally getting to that point. And that might be one of those perennial weeds that you just want to decide you want to deal with it. And there's any number of things. If it is in your lawn, you actually can use herbicides in the broadleaf weed type herbicides that you might use on dandelions and some of those. You certainly can use those as long as it's actively growing. So, and that will help, but generally what I always recommend is that read the label, and when it says to reapply it, like usually it'll say like after 6 weeks or so you can do another application, then I would reapply it, because that first application never seems to quite get the Creeping Charlie, and then it just comes back in full force, and I think it just makes it mad. So you just gotta get it again before it completely comes back. So I think that's probably the big thing, is making sure you do that second application if you do want to use a herbicide. But you can use, like, if it's in a flower bed, you can try and dig it out. You can smother it out, you know, certainly by using black plastic. Some of those things work out well. So sometimes smothering it, if it's in a flower bed kind of area where you can do that, you can do some smothering. But like I've used newspapers and then just lots and lots of mulch on top. And it's done a pretty good job of trying to smother it out. It kind of works its way out the sides, but you have a little bit less. So that's probably the thing. But it really is a tough one. So I would definitely recommend that. And if you can go ahead and do it before it flowers, it'll flower a little bit later here in the season. And
it's a very tough plant. And not only that, it will grow in less than desirable circumstances. And right. So if you have areas that are really shady, or maybe have over time become shady, it likes that just fine.
It grows better than the grass.
Yes.
And so maybe
yes.
we're growing the wrong thing. When we grow, you know, underneath the grass, maybe a Creepy Charlie makes more sense and just use it as a ground cover. You certainly could. Of course, it starts to creep into your flower beds and stuff too, and kind of overtakes everything. If it was a little bit better neighbor, you know, where it didn't overtake things, we'd probably be wanting to propagate.
Well, you could come over to my house and you could have a word with it. You could talk sternly to it.
Being a good neighbor.
I could say, look, this is Sandy
Mason.
What it means
to be a good neighbor.
She's a horticulture educator. Listen to what she says.
Yeah.
All right.
That'll work. But that is a tough one by far. One of the hardest weeds to get rid of.
Let us continue, and we'll talk next with somebody in Champaign. Line number three. Hello.
Hello. Back to the grasses. In an era of trying to reduce lawns and rain gardens and infusing native plants into gardens, could you give a little bit of equal time to native plantings and master naturalists and some of the movements that are afoot locally to encourage something different other than an interesting lawn?
Sure. I mean, it is one of those things that, you know, I think a lot of it depends on what kind of areas you have and whether you can actually do some other things besides lawn. And certainly, I mean, underneath a tree is a good example of grass doesn't like to grow under there, and so why fight it? You know, there's certainly lots of natives, a lot of spring ephemeral type wildflowers are going to be coming up soon, and they love it underneath trees. They're fine with that. So really sort of thinking about, you know, what actually grows in those areas, whether they're trying to fight, you know, having grass or whatever. And certainly there's a lot of interest now in native plants. And now, certainly within the horticulture industry, there's a lot of native plants where they're actually making selections for ones that maybe have certain flower color or leaf color or whatever. So we're seeing very blurry lines these days between what's considered a native plant and what's kind of a horticultural type plant. But the good news is, you know, a lot of them are really tough plants. Once they get established, they tolerate this really wet springs that we have. They tolerate the dry summers, and there's certainly a lot of advantages to going with a lot of the native plants. So, and it, certainly if people have any questions on certain plants, I'd be glad to help them with that as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And I think that extension, at least one book that I know of, has a book mm-hmm. just for that.
Absolutely. Landscaping with Native Plants. And actually, it's a great book. They actually, it talks about certain native plants, but then it also, you know, if you're one of those recipe people that really kind of needs a recipe, not sure, you know, what to plant with what, there's actually some nice maps in the back and sort of these recipes on what to do if you have like a wetter, drier garden, whatever it is. And so that's kind of nice too. Mm-hmm. So Landscaping with Native Plants.
So how hard is it or how easy is it to actually get to find the plants for purchase?
It depends on the plant, certainly. There are some of them that are going to be really hard to find, and I think that's the one thing you have to kind of realize. But the good news is Grand Prairie Friends actually has a plant sale. They do a native plant sale, and it's the second Saturday of May, whatever that happens to be. It's second Saturday of May at the Lincoln Square Village. And people can go there and they can get natively produced plants as well as natively grown plants. And so that's kind of nice. So that's probably a really good source is to go there. And then certainly we're starting to see more in some of the garden centers, but it may be one of those things where you do have to order some things through catalogs.
Okay. Well, let's talk next with someone in Champaign, I think, line number 3. Oh, no, that was the one we just had. Let's go to Mattoon, line number 4. Hi.
Good morning.
Yes.
Got a couple questions. The first one, I planted 2 rows of garlic last October and covered the raised rows and covered the plants, covered the rows with leaves. And just these last few days, why, they're popping through the leaves.
Sure.
And both rows. And last year I planted some and I was a little disappointed with the size.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it was the cold weather there in April or what it was, but I'm wondering, can you just fertilize a little at this particular time, just throw a little fertilizer on the rows, or and then I don't usually pull the leaves off until the weather gets a little better, mm-hmm. you know, late April or May.
Well, I think you'd want to fertilize when they're actively growing and really starting to grow. So I'm not sure I'd necessarily fertilize right now. I think I'd probably wait until you actually remove the leaves and then fertilize at that time when you're really trying to get them to actively grow. Because you really don't want to encourage necessarily a lot of growth right now because, you know, obviously they might get nipped by the cold. So I don't think I'd do it now, but you certainly could do it once you pull the leaves off.
My second question is I've never grown rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
When would be the time to plant it? I'm not even sure what I'd plant. Is it bulbs or is it seed or what?
It's a plant. It's normally you get like a 2 or 3 year old plant is usually about the best way to do. Or you actually might buy it as roots. So one way or the other, you'll get them. And usually we're talking about for a lot of those perennial things like asparagus and rhubarb, it'd be the 1st of April is really a good time to do that. So if you want to, you know, check it out or order some now, then you'd certainly have it by the time it's
You can just go to where they sell plants and so forth, and they'll have rhubarb plants most of you.
Yeah, usually most of the bigger garden centers will have some rhubarb. If you want a particular variety or you're looking for something in particular, I think I'd probably go ahead and order it just to make sure you have it. But most of the local garden centers will have some, you know, nice varieties of rhubarb.
Planted in early April?
Uh-huh. And that's fine. Probably the biggest thing, you know, they like full sun. I'd make sure it's a fairly well-drained spot. They don't like to be really wet in certain wet areas. But other than that, they're pretty tough.
Well, that's the problem with the full sun. I've got quite a number of trees around.
Yeah. So that's going to be a little bit harder for you, but if you could find it at least where they're getting maybe 6 to 8 hours, I think you're going to have a lot better success with it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Well, we certainly have time for other callers. We're about midway through this first hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. If you have a houseplant question, we can do that too. Annie and all of that's welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. To go back just to pruning for a second, people could have actually been doing that kind of thing before now.
Yeah, sure.
And you also want to be careful about something that's going to flower if you prune a woody plant that's going to flower. If you cut stuff off like that, you're not going to get your flowers.
Yeah.
So But for what kind of things is it still okay? Let's say if you have other kinds of shrubs or small trees or whatever, still okay to do that?
Sure. And it really is, certainly if you have trees, unless you have a flowering tree. But most of the time, there's so many flowers on them anyway, we don't worry too much. If we trim a crab apple or whatever it is, there's usually still plenty of flowers. So you certainly could go ahead and do that. Probably the other things would be some plants that maybe you haven't been all that terribly happy with, or you really need to renew them and really get them going. And I'm thinking of some of the shrubs that tend to be, you know, they get kind of tall and lanky and not all that great. So privet would be a good one. And actually, those we actually prune down to the ground, which is a little dramatic. And I guarantee your spouse will be talking to you about it. I can't believe you did that. But actually, you know, privet, actually some of the spireas, the pink spireas certainly, potentilla, there's some of those shrubs. They just get kind of tall and lanky, and they're just not as pretty as they used to be. So you wouldn't do this necessarily every year, but certainly you might do it every 3 to 5 years just to renew them. Red twig dogwood, I think it's another one's a good example. Just cut it to the ground, and it looks so much better, and the twigs will be red again, and they're just much more, just more adaptable, happier looking plants, that's for sure. So there's certainly any number of those. But anything that blooms before mid-June, we generally tell you to wait to prune it after it blooms. So that'd be things like forsythia and lilac, certainly, and the big white spireas, things that bloom early.
And I suppose if you have something like that and you feel like you just have to do some pruning, take some pieces off, you can actually take those branches and you can force them. And bring them inside and maybe at least, you know, enjoy them a little bit that way.
And sometimes it's one of those things where you just feel like you're just so sick of this plant. Not that we're ever sick of plants. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. We're not very happy with the way this plant looks. And maybe you just decide whether it's lilac or forsythia or whatever. You just want to forget the flowers for this year. You're not going to kill them by, you know, pruning them back right now. You're just going to lose the flowers. And as you said, you can always bring a few in, have the flowers that way.
All right. Let's talk next with someone in Urbana. Line number 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I don't know whether there's anything I can do about this, but this time of year I always fall for those supermarket flowering plants. And I look for ones that have, you know, not only full bloom, but then some buds that are coming out. But then the buds never come out on anything. If you have cut flowers from the florist, and is there anything you can do about that, or is that just something I have to accept?
So are these particular plants that you're thinking of, or it just seems like everything? Are you talking like a potted
plant? Well,
I
bought about a week ago, and I forgot what the other thing is, but nothing. And it seems like it isn't a tight bud. It looks like it's going to come open. Then it never does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to say, is that sometimes when you buy them, especially even like cut flowers, if they're really in a super tight bud, you'll notice that certainly with roses. If it's really a really tight bud, they often don't go ahead and open. So that would be kind of the stages of when you buy them. You just want to sort of pay attention to that a little bit. On the mums, I don't know, would they have dried out too much? Was that a possibility?
Careful. You know, yeah. I put them in the kitchen where I'm working, and so checking the soil, I thought I kept it, and I didn't see any wilt in it.
Yeah. So, because usually they'll go ahead and flower, unless, again, they're in really tight bud. Often some of those won't go ahead and flower.
Okay.
So I'm not sure there's anything you're necessarily doing wrong. I would just probably look at them, and maybe you're picking them just a little bit, you know, thinking that you're going to have better flowering by picking ones in tighter bud. You may decide that maybe, you know, I'm going to pick one that isn't quite, where it's actually showing color. That's probably the best thing. If the flower is actually starting to show some color, then generally those will go ahead and open.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. And next we'll talk with someone in Terre Haute, and that's on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I've got a property that's got a lot of shade, and also I've got some place in my yard that's on the north side with a tree over it, and I was thinking about ferns, but I've never planted ferns, and I don't know whether that's something that's easy to do, difficult to do, whether you can give me any hints about what kind of ferns would survive in a Midwest winter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hang up and just listen on the radio.
Okay, all right. Sure. And actually, ferns are great for those shady spots. Probably the one thing about pretty much all the ferns is they don't like to dry out, and they don't necessarily like a lot of wind. So they're really more, if you think about them, they're really more for those, for most of the ferns, they're more of that forested kind of situation where there's a certain amount, a lot of organic matter. The soil tends to have some leaves, you know, leaves and stuff around it, so it's nice mulch. So those are the kind of areas they really like. If it tends to be a dry shade, you're going to have a little bit harder time with ferns for sure. So I think probably just looking at making sure there's plenty of organic matter, maybe adding compost to those areas, making sure you mulch them afterwards. And it sounds like just from the description that those would probably do fine for you. There's any number of ferns out there. And actually in the horticulture industry, we're seeing more and more ferns sort of come online. But some of them that I particularly like, there's one called Lady Fern, which is really pretty. And it actually has kind of a red stem to it with these very delicate looking leaves. And that, I think that's one that's really worked out nice. There's another one called Japanese Painted Fern, which is nice. And I think that one actually does a little bit better from what I've noticed in drier situations. So maybe not quite so wet as you might see. I think Maidenhair Fern is one of those that really is a little bit tough and doesn't like to dry out at all. So they're really pretty, but I'd probably wait on some of those. And actually, I would just check with, you certainly can check with your Department of Natural Resources on what ferns are native, you know, to your particular area. And then just go on with a lot of those. You'll find that those are the ones that are really going to do well. And there's certainly any number of those that are out there, Christmas fern and some of those.
And does it take some time for them to get established?
It really, you know, it depends on how big the plant, of course, but they're not super fast growers. I mean, you're right. They're not super fast growers. So I might add some other plants along with them to sort of help things out, and you know, whether you have hostas or whatever it is, to sort of, you know, fill in those spaces and sort of get the area going. But certainly well worth it. And they're so pretty and you just cannot beat them.
I guess I'm thinking because I've had a neighbor who had a lot of ferns in their yard and wanted to take some out of some areas and just kind of thin them because I think they felt it was started to look kind of like Jurassic Park.
Oh, maybe had some really big.
Yeah, and some of them were very
tall. You can get really big ones, sure.
And really big, beautiful, vigorous plants. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's great. I was happy to have them. So I have dug up at a dozen, two dozen, and moved some of them into my yard in places where I thought it would be the right conditions.
Right.
And they just haven't really done much of anything. And I've always wondered, well, was this me? Should I have done something different? Was it really not, the conditions really not good? I know that some of them are still there. I can find them, but they're nothing like what they were like when I moved them.
Right. Right. And it does take time, and they don't like to dry out. That's probably the big thing.
So
maybe, one of those things that maybe your neighbor tends to water more in those areas, or maybe those areas just tend to be more moist. So I certainly wouldn't give up on them, but I think it's that dry period, like July and August, that we get, where they really need some supplemental water, depending on where they are. But they really will appreciate, I'll put it that way, some supplemental watering. They'll do much better for you for most of them. So.
Well, let's talk next with someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi, I have an Arrowwood viburnum that's probably 6 or 7 years old, about 8 feet tall, and in strong winds, heavy rains, it just falls open. Is the Arrowwood one that I can just cut to the ground and rejuvenate that way?
Actually, you can with those. They're really pretty tough. And so if you want to go ahead and do that, you certainly could.
Okay.
Or unless you want to wait until after it flowers. But I would just go ahead and do it and...
And I can do that any time of year if I did want to wait till after it flowers this year.
If you're really going to take it down to the ground, I'd probably do that now. We usually like to do that kind of stuff now when we know that, you know, it's going to be halfway decent weather and they're going to recover quickly. The other way, you probably could get away with it on that particular plant kind of any time, but I would be concerned if you were doing it later on the season and you really felt, and we got into a dry spell, I would probably water it a little bit. And you may notice that they'll actually kind of get kind of tall and lanky, and you may end up actually doing a little bit of what's called heading back. So sometimes they'll get really, because they'll send out lots of growth, so you may find you actually have to, you know, take off a few inches kind of toward the end of summer.
Okay.
So don't be surprised with that.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. And let's see. Well, next we'll talk with someone in Georgetown on our line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you for the show. I've got 3 or 4 questions here that I can kind of lump them together. Is it okay now to transplant, or do I need to wait till later, like a clematis, asparagus, and I'd like to separate some sedum and that, what I call the ditch lily, that orange lily.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to do those things now, or do I need to wait a little bit later?
I think it probably, for most of those things, probably like the ditch lily or day lily, you can do that kind of any time. I don't think
okay.
they care.
They're pretty hardy, I think.
They're pretty tough. I think especially on the clematis, I would definitely wait to probably the 1st of April when you're actually starting to see a little bit of growth on them, and then
okay.
I probably move those at that time. And most of the other stuff, the sedum would probably get away with being moved pretty much any time, but usually we say the 1st of April is really a good
okay.
time to be thinking about that.
And what about asparagus?
Asparagus, too. I'd probably look more, I'd at least wait a couple weeks, to be honest with you. I'd probably look
okay.
more the end of March, 1st of April.
And from listening to you, I assume I've got a golden vickery. This would be an okay time to
go for it.
Trim it.
Off with their heads.
Because it's gotten so huge and
yeah.
so big.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll look so much better. Just take it to the ground, and it'll look so much
okay.
better.
And then I have a bridal wreath, or the old spirea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shaded a lot by a tree. So I assume they need more sun. It's just not
yeah.
done very well. It's up close to the house and shaded by a tree. It's on the south side of the house, but it's shaded.
Right.
What would be a better bush to put in there up close to the house, or is there something I need to do to it to get it to do better?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. They really need more sun, to be honest
yeah.
with you. They tend to kind of open up and kind of get a little leggy and kind of funny looking. So this does get some sun, you
it
said? Or
a little sun, but, you know, like right now it's getting sun, but as soon as those trees leaf out, then it doesn't get a whole lot of sun.
Right.
So is there a bush that would, you know, just for something up close to the house? Or
Do you want it to be small, or do you care how...
It
How
doesn't
big
make
do
a whole lot of difference, but something that'll grow in a shade, yeah.
Right. Well, there's a couple of things. There's actually what's called an itea. I don't know if there's another name for it. It's itea.
Okay.
And actually, those do pretty well in kind of a shadier kind of condition. They like a little bit of moisture, but they actually have really pretty fall color. They have nice white flowers on them. There's a cultivar called Henry's Garnet, which is kind of pretty and has nice flowers too, and that's kind of a nice one. I don't know how you feel about hydrangeas. Actually, hydrangeas would do okay in that
okay.
spot.
Oh, yeah, I like them. Okay.
But, they tend to need a little bit more water, you know, because of those big leaves. So that
right.
would be the one thing.
Okay.
But certainly the hydrangeas, and actually there's some nice cultivars now of hydrangeas that you might find that you like in that kind of spot if you're really looking for something that's going to flower for you. And actually,
okay.
most of the viburnums will take some shade. They won't take a lot of shade, but they'll actually take some shade too. So there's any number of...
You want to spell that, viburnum?
It's V as in Victor,
yeah.
I, B as in boy,
right.
U, R, N-U-M. I have to think about
okay.
it, man.
So, yeah,
I just stop and think about it.
Is that a flowering bush or just green?
Yeah, no, they're flowers. They have flowers. I thought maybe we were looking for something, maybe a little bit more flower, but they
yeah,
will take some shade.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. Thank you so much.
Okay, very good. Thank you. About 10
Bye.
Minutes left here in this part of the show with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. The number, if you'd like to call us, if you're in Champaign Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Over to Belgium, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
You looked like you were in your element last night, Mr. Ange.
Well, I don't know.
Just a cooking
Not
fool,
sure
isn't
what,
he?
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, exactly. The fool part, with the emphasis on the fool part.
I'd like to talk to Ms. Mason again about my peaches and my little
espalier.
Uh-huh. However you say that. I put in like 8 plants, 9 plants last year, maybe, yeah. And I guess it might have been the year before, actually. And I notice now I'm looking out there, and I've got 2 or 3 that are not doing very well. And I'm going to replace them. And I have, under my older trees, I have starch that are coming up from seeds. Can I dig those up now and transplant them over so I can be in the line where I want to espalate them?
So these are peach seedlings?
Yes, peach
seedlings.
That are
coming up?
Yes.
You certainly could do that if you want to go that route.
Okay.
I don't know whether you had selected some dwarfs or some certain varieties.
No, this is a particular heritage variety. It's called a Crawford peach.
Oh,
it's
okay.
one that's not used at all anymore. It makes a very small peach, but the thing about the peach is it's extremely intense peach flavor.
Oh.
That most other peaches, you know, they have a little bit less
right.
peachy flavor.
Right,
they're
right.
big. Everybody likes to see those big peaches. These are little tiny things, but They're very tasty.
Okay. Well, and you know the seedlings because they're seedlings, not knowing that they're going to be exactly what you had before.
Yes,
but they certainly would.
Well, what I do is I pick underneath certain trees that I like better than others.
Oh, and then take the
seedlings.
So the odds are better. Okay.
Yeah.
No, good. You certainly can do that.
Yeah, sure. but they had come up last year, and they're, you know, they may have about maybe a foot of growth already on them.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And so you can go ahead and cut, dig those up with a, like a spade or something?
Sure, sure. I just try to get as much root as you can on those, but
like
no, they'll be fine.
I usually try to go way down deep. I do it later in the year, but this year I want to get them started because you said there was a lot of work in trying to do this job, and I want to get an early start on it.
Yeah, so that I think that's a good idea.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Very good. Thank you. Next we'll talk. We have a couple of Urbana callers. We'll go first to line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
First question is, when you speak of creeping Charlie, is that what's also known as gill over the ground?
Yes, or ground Lycoma, ivy.
Lycoma hydracea.
Yeah, yeah. Or okay. And sometimes it's listed as ground ivy. I know a lot of the labels say ground ivy.
Okay, when I look in my gardening books, I don't come up with creeping Charlie.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Maybe there was a Charlie that just decided didn't want that plant associated with them. So they lobbied against it. I don't know.
And the other question is, how late in the spring can I transplant mature evening primrose?
How late in the season can you transplant them?
Right. I have some old plants that I want to move farther away from my sidewalk.
Right. Well, I think certainly through the month of April, you're fine. Once I would even say the first couple of weeks of May, I think you're fine. I'd probably, you know, be thinking, you know, really getting it done before, say, the end of May. I think it's just better off. We just never quite know. If we knew what the temperature was going to be in June and July, then, you know, we can make a better guess. But it just gets riskier the longer you wait. But
anytime in the next month or so.
Oh, sure.
I have a good weather day.
Oh, sure. Go
okay.
for it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Very good. And to another Urbana caller, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, Andy mentioned white forsythia, and I think the botanical name for that is Abelia.
Mm-hmm.
And it blooms in March, and it's a perennial, it's a shrub, of course. What I wanted to know, and it smells of cinnamon. What I wanted to know, you said something about, you whipped by white forsythia when you were talking about pruning and taking it to the ground. And mine is now 12 years old and it's thick. And I cut it back from the outside, mm-hmm. you know, but I haven't really done any interior very much.
Mm-hmm.
Want to give me some hard information on that?
Well, usually, you know, for those early blooming things, usually we wait till after they bloom. So right after they bloom, you can do a couple of methods with those guys. Actually, you can go ahead and just remove the old, you know, the bigger branches. Sometimes that gets a little bit harder, but that actually is one way to, because they'll bloom better on the newer stuff and let the new stuff sort of come up and do its thing. So you can go ahead and do that, or actually you can go ahead and prune them down completely. So depending on how you want to do it, but if you just really don't want to take them to clear to the ground, I think just removing the old branches is really your best bet.
Like lilacs.
Yeah, it's pretty much just like lilacs, absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, how hard is it to dig one out?
To dig one out?
Yeah.
That particular one, I've never really dug one out, to be honest with you. But I from what I've seen, it looks like they sucker up pretty well. So I would think, yeah, so I would think it wouldn't be that hard to go ahead and dig one. I'm trying to get halfway decent root, and it'll still do okay.
Okay,
so
thank
I'd
you.
Say go for it.
All right, thank you. I was not aware that there was a white forsythia.
Yeah, they're not actually related to the other. They kind of call them white forsythias because they bloom white, and it's kind of they bloom at the same time, but they're actually not related.
And apparently it was White Flower Farm that introduced this plant.
I did not know that.
Well, according to, I'm here, if you'll forgive me, this is the webpage of the Cooperative Extension Service of University of Arkansas.
Oh, man.
But and they have a little, I thought, well, okay, I'm curious. I put it into my browser here, and it comes up with an article about the white forsythia, and apparently that's what they say. White Flower Farm introduced the white forsythia in 1955.
Wow.
And it looks like it's a pretty plant. I'm sure that
they
it would
are
be.
Very pretty. You just don't see them as often. And I'm not sure exactly why. They're still, you know, just as nice and just as hardy and all the other things. That for some reason the yellow forsythia has always gotten all the
yeah. Okay. Well, we have maybe about 5-6 minutes here. If somebody wants to call real quick, otherwise, now we have had some, you know, the weather's not exactly been the best. It's still kind of on the cool side. It's kind of wet. But I'm sure that people are all really chomping at the bit to get mm-hmm. on and do things. And I'm sure that if we do get some really nice weather, and I'm sure we eventually, sooner or later, we will. People are going to want to get out there and, okay, so what kind of things, if you have done nothing since last year, yeah. and you're ready to get out there, you've got a good opportunity, what are some of the first things that you suggest people should think about?
Well, they certainly can go ahead and start. I'm not sure I'd remove a lot of mulch off my perennial beds, but you certainly go ahead and cut some of the stems. I noticed my sedums already starting to pop up. And so you want to go ahead and cut those and kind of get that cleaned off. But I'd still kind of leave some of the leaves and stuff on it, but sort of get those branches off. And actually what I do sometimes with those old stems is I cut them off, but then I sort of lay them back on top of the plant, and that way it's still kind of mulch, but then it's really easy to pull off when it's time to sort of clean everything up. So sometimes I've done that if I don't have a whole lot of shredded leaves or whatever. So you certainly could do that. Ornamental grasses would be another one that I would certainly think about cutting those down, because we want to make sure we get rid of all that old stuff before the new stuff starts to come up, and some of those will start to go ahead and be leafing out here very soon. So sort of clean up the perennial bed, and then certainly pruning. What I tell people is prune something every year. Every year prune something, and you'll find that then you won't have these sort of 5 year, 6 year, 7 year spans where just suddenly you have to prune everything all at one time. So if you can get in some kind of rotation, it's really a good idea.
Okay. Urbana, another caller here, line one. Hello.
Hi. I wonder if there's a secret to trimming red twig dogwood so that they will grow upright when they grow back. My experience has been that when I cut them back, they grow out at all different directions.
So are they getting plenty of sun?
Yes.
Okay, so it's in a sunny spot. And then are you cutting these to the ground, or
not
how are you cutting?
Not necessarily to the ground, but maybe, you know, cut back a foot.
Okay. What you and then are you getting new stems coming up from the base, or are they coming out of the old?
Coming out of the old.
Okay. What you may find, and really what I found, is that generally I would cut them to the ground and try to encourage some new stuff that will come straight up from the base.
Okay.
And that's what I've done. But I have noticed that sometimes they really grow so much and that I do have to do some heading back, usually like in the 1st of July or so. They get really tall. And before they get super tall, I go ahead and take off, you know, depending, but it may be as much as a foot. And so they're not quite so top heavy.
Right.
So I definitely, sometimes, from what I've seen, the suckers come up pretty straight. So I wonder if it's because it's coming off of that old wood that it's making them kind of odd and coming off the side that way.
Okay, great. I'll give it a try.
Sure. Good luck.
All right, very good. Thank you. Again, somebody wants to call real quick. We can get in one, maybe two calls here before we finish up. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Are there anything in the way of events that are going to be coming up soon?
Actually, check with your local extension office. A lot of the Master Gardener programs actually have their garden days. Vermilion County is actually having theirs this weekend. So in Danville, if you're in the Danville, really Oakwood area, you can enjoy that one as well. And then Macon County in Decatur is having theirs on March 28th. So that's an opportunity, again, to sort of see what's going on. And they're always good programs, and usually they're fairly inexpensive, and it's a great way to sort of see what's going on and really sort of get into the whole idea of spring and see what you can do. And since it's still a little early, it's a great opportunity to learn, and you don't feel quite so bad if you're inside.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously here because we, at least into about the third week of April, there is still the possibility of a frost. Yeah, so you really want to be careful. You don't want to put out anything that's tender. But if you have, when is it too soon to start thinking about if you're going to say you're going to plant a hardy perennial, something that would stand it if it got cold, and something that was maybe a pretty good sized plant that was, well along. And at what point is it too early? Or is it not too early to think about something like that?
Well, I think probably if it really hasn't grown much, as in you buy this plant and it's really just barely grown, you could certainly plant it in April and not have any problem. Sometimes what you'll find is that because of the way the greenhouses have stored them over the winter, maybe they're in a greenhouse, that they end up coming out fairly early and they're almost too succulent. So you may find for those that you're going to have to give them a little wind protection. So if the plant is like way up and it's really, maybe it's even almost in bloom, in other words, it's out of its cycle, You may find you actually have to give it a little wind protection, or you may decide you actually don't want to plant it right away. So it really kind of depends on how much the plant's growing. If it's growing, it's pretty much along the same line as all the other perennials, then I would plant it. It's fine. It's going to be great. But if it really seems like it's ahead of its time, then I think I would be a little bit more reluctant to put out there. Certainly go ahead and protect it.
All right. Let's go to Champagne Caller here on our line 4. Hello.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
Quick question, 2 questions for you. I got a black gum that's probably about, though, been planted for about 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be developing at the base of the trunk. The bark is splitting vertically.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something I can do something about? Any idea what that might be?
So I'm not sure exactly. They're great trees. I mean, it's wonderful that you have one, actually. They're kind of hard to find and hard to get going. I'm not sure whether it's a frost crack or something else, but somewhere along the line, it's obviously gotten some damage. Unfortunately, there really isn't anything you can do about that. So your best bet is just to kind of, you know, try to keep the plant healthy, you know, water during drought periods, even though it's still a young tree. So I'd water during drought periods, those kind of things. But there really isn't anything you can do. And it could be strictly just a frost crack, or whether it's a temperature difference or something's happened somewhere along the line.
Do I have to fret that I'm going to lose it anytime soon?
No. If it's just they can handle vertical cracks much easier than they can handle any horizontal type of damage. If it's just a vertical crack, what should happen, or hopefully will happen, is they'll go ahead and sort of fill that in until eventually you won't even really notice it all that much.
Good.
So I just try to keep it healthy and go from there. And you've got it mulched and all that good stuff. And
sure.
Okay, good. Great. Go for it.
Question 2 for you, a Japanese maple.
Uh-huh.
When's a good time to trim it? I'm getting conflicting information from different books that I read.
So what?
Prune it down a little so it quits growing so tall and bushes out a little more instead.
Okay. So I don't know. I'm not sure I'd do a lot of heavy pruning on it, but you certainly could do that now. I don't know why you necessarily want to wait too much. I don't know why. I don't know. When you say you get conflicting information, I'm not sure what the thinking is.
Some books say do it in the spring. Some books say do it in the fall after the plant goes dormant.
I would do it now. I think you're just fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, there we'll have to finish up with the promise that Sandy will be back again next month, and we'll do the program again. In the meantime, you might want to tune in to the program we have on our companion station, WILT-TV. It's called Illinois Gardener, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. It's a live show, and they take calls, and this kind of calls. They have a rotating cast of characters. Sandy occasionally appears on the program, she being one of them. And that's also another good source of advice. And, of course, you can also look for the extension person who is close to you and look them up in the phone book. They are there to help with these kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.